Hey, welcome to another episode of Evolutionary.org Raw Podcast. This is your host, Steve Smee. I'm with the Mason. We're coming to you live from our Evolutionary.org headquarters. We are in the bunker filming this. So our first topic, we're going to get into a relationship topic. Now, this is one that we've talked about kind of before, but this got brung up again, and it's kind of fascinating how we've evolved on this topic. And I'm not really sure why. I just think the younger generations are more different than the older generations when it comes to stuff like this. But we have another guy who's saying his wife busted his stash. He says that he left his gun safe unlocked and she got nosy and found my test vials. She went batshit crazy and broke them and threw them away. After a long-ass conversation, she calmed down a bit. Problem is, I have no more tests. And then he complains about that, and he's like, should I wait and run PCT or whatever? But I wanted to kind of get into the first part of his question about the wife finding his steroids in the first place. Now, here's a couple things I want to bring up. You know, I've been in many different long-term relationships. And one thing is for certain. Women will find shit out. You cannot keep secrets from women. So the fact that he was trying to keep something from her and she found out and he's like shocked by it. And that just shows you how clueless some guys are. Because you're never going to keep anything from women. Guys cheat. Women cheat. But you know what? Guys get caught way more than women get caught because women are very, very sneaky. They're very good at hiding stuff. Men are very, very shitty at hiding stuff to the point where it's like buffoonery how dumb men are when it comes to hiding stuff. So if you cheat on your wife, if you hide stuff from her, you hide anything. It could be money, it could be steroids, it could be jewelry, it could be anything. She's going to find out. All right, women are very, very good at that. So my view is you should not keep secrets from your wife. And my view is that you have a choice as to who your wife is. You don't have a choice as to who your parents are, your biological parents. You have no choice. But your wife, you get to choose who that is. So, you know, why would you choose to be with someone who you're not willing to trust? And Matt, you're married. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, it's crazy that he would feel that's the right thing to do. From the sound of it, he probably never even had the conversation with her about, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing, because we know what the stigma of steroid use is. We know what it's portrayed as in the media. Right? The guy that's going to do it, and then he's going to go and he's going to murder a bunch of people. That's what they want you to think. Or you're going to use it, and then your heart's going to explode and you're going to die. Is that the reality? Not for 99.9% of people. No, that's not what happens. But that's what's out there. So if you're married to somebody, I mean, I would hope to God you're comfortable enough to talk to them. So you need to have the conversation. Obviously, you're into fitness. You're living a healthy lifestyle if you're thinking of running a cycle. So that's, you know, the first step. So, you know, it shouldn't come as a complete surprise that you want to push yourself to the next level. You want to get better. So you need to have the conversation. Of course, at the beginning, she's going to be like, no, you don't need to be doing that. That's dirty, blah, blah, blah. But you just explain it. You have the facts with you. You don't talk shit. You know, you talk about what it actually is. You talk about, you know, the studies and the things you understand, and you go from there. It may not be a one day thing. It may take some time, but, you know, that's what you got to do at the beginning. You can't just say, well, I want to do something. She's not going to love it, so I'm going to hide it. You know, that's never going to work. And it doesn't matter what it is that you were hiding, to be honest. The way that she doesn't care that it was steroids or if it was, you know, another girl's underwear. Like, it doesn't matter. The fact is that something was being hidden from her, and trust is going to be a major issue now. So that's where it starts. But he's going to have a lot of work to do if he wants to fix it, or maybe he doesn't. Maybe that's the root of this whole thing, that maybe he's just not happy at all.
Is there anything you should ever keep a secret from your wife?
Other than a present for her, probably not. Do you have an example?
The present that you get for her, she probably knows about anyway.
So dude, no joke.
That's even hard to keep from her anyway. So, I mean, women are very intuitive. They're very good at keeping a secret. I honestly, I have secrets that I keep from my girlfriend, and I would not keep those secrets from the person that I was with. I mean, nothing serious, you know, just like personal things. But like, I would never, like, if I got, you know, married, I would never keep anything from my wife. I mean, you have to be completely, what's the word for it? Transparent is the word for it. Like, I'll give you an example. My phone, like my girlfriend, I gave her my phone here. You know, here's my phone, like change my ringtone or something. Or here's my phone. Can you take a video that I took of my dog and put it on, you know, online and save it to my, you know, the iPad or whatever, you know, cause you know, I don't give a shit if she takes my phone. I really don't care. I'll give her my phone, be like, hey, can you call this place? You have to ask yourself, do you trust your significant other with your phone? And if the answer is no, then why not? Like, what are you hiding from them? Are you like, do you have like people on the side? Do you have like, you know, chicks, exes that you talk to, et cetera, et cetera? And if that's the case, you really need to, you know, work on that. That's something that you need to not do. You shouldn't be talking to exes, shouldn't be talking to other girls. You need to, if you want that type of lifestyle, don't get into a relationship and don't get married in the first place. So I don't think there's anything that you should be keeping from your wife. Everything needs to be transparent, you know, and, you know, we've talked about the money thing in the past. If you guys make a decision that you want to like keep your money separate or whatever, you want to have your account, she can have her account. That'd be the only thing that I would think that you would keep a secret, like how much money you had in your bank account. Because, like, you know, there'd be no point in her knowing that you have $100,000 in your bank account, you know? I mean, what's really the point? That's probably just money that you're keeping for a rainy day. And that would be money that you would share with her if need be. So I really can't think of anything, Matt. How about you?
No, and you know what? I always, whenever this kind of thing gets brought up, I always, you know, mention the fact, what if the shoe's on the other foot? You know, what if something was being hidden from you? How would you feel? You'd feel used. You'd feel like crap. You know, you'd feel like, well, what else are you hiding? Like, I can't trust you now. So you got to look at it that way too, you know, because this guy knows that what he's doing, if he's doing it the right way, is probably not a huge deal, in my opinion. But he has to realize she doesn't understand it that way. She only understands it from what's out in the public, what's out in the media. That's what she understands. So you got to at least try. The fact that he didn't even try makes me think, well, he probably doesn't give a crap. You know, that's probably not the only thing that he's hiding, to be honest. But no, I think you always have to be transparent with everything, because if you don't, like you said, Steve, it'll come back, they'll find it, and then you just look that much worse. You're better off just to be upfront.
So our next topic, we'll definitely hit this one up again, because this is a good one. Our next topic is Fix My Cycle, Bro. That's a segment that we like to have on our podcast. So this one is a very simple one, and it's basically, he wants to run T-Bowl alone. He wants to know, can you run a T-Bowl cycle only and get good results? Should I do it 8 weeks? And he wants to know what she should do for PCT. And he also wants to know, does he have to run tests with the cycle? So, Matt, you've run T-Bowl, I believe, several times. And I think that you've run it alone or with a little bit of tests. Tell us a little bit about your experiences with it.
Yeah, you definitely – I really like it. It's just one of those things that works well with me. You really don't want to run it absolutely alone. You can. I mean, the question is, can I do it? I would never say no because, you know, my view is always try things out for yourself. You know, people will tell you, you can't run DECA with Tren. Some people will say that's, you know, the most amazing cycle you could ever run. People will tell you, you have to have a test base. Other people will tell you, you don't need tests. So if you're intrigued by it, try it and see how it goes. And then you'll know if it's for you or not. Just from my experience and just looking at it on paper and, you know, what I would know about it is solo, it's going to be probably too mild to be worth it. Can you make some gains on it? Yes, they'll be, you know, not huge. But the thing I worry about is that you're shutting down your natural testosterone production. And while you are replacing it with some testosterone, I mean, T-ball is a testosterone derivative, you're not getting as much of an androgenic effect as your body's own testosterone or if you were injecting testosterone. So you're going to get mainly the anabolic effect, which could lead to, you know, a bunch of different things. And it's more going to be how you feel. You know, you're probably not going to have a huge sex drive. It's going to be, you know, those male things that make us men are going to fall off a little bit. That's the risk, I think. I can't say for sure that that's what's going to happen because I've always run something, you know, at least somewhat androgenic with it. I think you don't need a huge test dose with it. I think if you're running a TRT dose, that's fine. I think you could run other, you could run D-ball with it and keep it short. I mean, there's different things you can do. That's probably what I would do though. I'd probably run it. If I was really intrigued with something, I'd probably just do it. I don't think I'd go 8 weeks. I think that's a little bit long, but I think I'd probably try it out for, say, plan for six and after four, make a decision if it's worth, you know, going on with it or not, and really keep track of it as you go. That's something I would definitely log, how you're feeling, your results, everything, and just get a good idea of how it affected you.
If you were to run T-ball alone as a guy, I would run 30, maybe 40 milligrams a day. You could have an extra 10 milligram dose on your workout day just to give you a little psychological boost, you know? And I would run it, I agree with Matt, 6 weeks. You could go 7 or 8 weeks. It is liver toxic. So that is the issue. So once you're going past 6 weeks, you're putting a lot of strain on your liver. I don't have a problem with guys running oral-only cycles. Lots of guys have run oral-only cycles. Back in the day when pro-hormones were legal and they were really good pro-hormones, like the Superdrol clones, for example, those were really, really powerful hormones. And guys would run them solo all the time. I mean, they'd run 4 weeks and they nail their PRs in strength and they have great results. And T-ball is an anabolic steroid, but like Matt said, it is not androgenic. So the results you're going to get from T-ball are going to be really, really mild. So if you want to run T-ball as an oral-only cycle, I would stack a little bit of D-ball with it. So what I would do is I would do 30 milligrams a day T-ball and 10 milligrams a day D-ball. The D-ball will provide you with that androgenic kick. That would be a really, really good cycle. But there are orals that you can definitely run alone and have tremendous results. Anadrol is one that comes to mind. You can run 25 milligrams of Anadrol a day for 4 weeks, and you will have tremendous results on it. It is a very, very powerful oral. So anyone who tells you that you can't get great gains on just an oral, they're just, I don't know what to say. I mean, that's their opinion. That's fine, but it's just not true. I mean, I know tons of guys, they just don't want to inject. So they use orals. They run oral-only cycles, and they get great results. I mean, you see the transformation that they have running oral-only cycles. So I don't have a problem with it at all. You definitely want to run your N2Guard with it to protect your liver. And N2Guard also has TUDCA, which is very, very, very crucial. I'd also would consider for PCT, you definitely want to run a 4 to 6 week PCT. I would do HC Generate for PCT. I think that you'll be okay running HC Generate for six weeks. 6 to 8 weeks of HC Generate should work. I don't think you need a SERM because orals have really short half-lives. So they're going to be in your system a short amount of time when you start taking them. It's not like an injectable that's in your system many, many weeks after where you need a comprehensive PCT. So, you know, that would be my advice there. Anything else to add, Matt, before you get us into our next topic?
Yeah, I just think that's a really good point on PCT. You don't want to just do nothing. They still are steroids. They're still in your system, but it does make it easy that, you know, most of their half-lives are, you know, 6 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours. So they're out of your system really quick. So, I mean, after that last dose, I mean, the next day your body's already on its way to recovering. You know, it's already starting. There's nothing still trickling into the system long, you know, like a long ester. It takes weeks to, you know, slowly diminish. So I think that's a great, great point on the PCT. Let's get into our next topic then. I have a couple topics that are about drugs. And the first one is related to gyno. And this is a really good question. So this is a guy, he titled it gyno flare-up question. So he says, I've been searching for the answers for these two questions with no luck. So I figured I'd ask anyway. I've seen too much conflicting information on these two questions. And I think we can probably say that about any question that's asked online. You always get conflicting information. But his first question is, if you start to have a flare-up of gyno when taking Novodex, do you continue or stop the use of Arimidex? And two, is it better to continue the Novodex only for a few days past the gyno flare going away, or do you take the Novodex the rest of the cycle at a lower dose? So good questions. I mean, I would start with probably don't run aromatizing compounds if you're very sensitive or if you have gyno flare-ups. That would be my first advice. Then you can just avoid it altogether. I mean, there's guys that they won't run anything without test. Test aromatizes like crazy. So, you know, if you're going to do that, just run your test at a low dose and then run something else with it that's not going to aromatize like crazy. You know, you can put something together easily that way. You know, run Primo or something like that. You know, there's tons of options. So that would be my first advice to get out of this situation. So with the first question, would you continue or stop using Arimidex? Aromacin's better than Arimidex anyways as an AI. So I would definitely recommend switching because the Arimidex is much more potent. It's not a suicide AI, so there is that risk of rebound. For somebody that's estrogen sensitive, you don't want any risk of estrogen rebound. You're just asking for trouble there. So I would use Aromacin right away, and I would just run a normal dose. 10 milligrams every other day should be fine. I would continue that because they don't work the same way. And AI is going to disable the aromatase enzyme. So that's the key. Aromacin's going to disable it forever. It's done. You know, it will bind to certain, you know, not every single one, obviously, but when it binds to an aromatase enzyme, it's disabled. It's done. So that's the key there. Novadex doesn't do that. Novadex is a CIRM. It binds to the receptor. So that's a completely different thing we're talking about here. So yes, you're going to want to run both. If it's bad, I'd probably get off the cycle altogether. Gyno can be real nasty. It's something you really want to have taken care of. You don't want to be running cycles with gyno. It's going to get worse. You're going to end up having surgery. We had a really good post on the forum about someone getting surgery. Like, it costs thousands and thousands of dollars. It's not just something you go and get done, you know, and you're in and out. It's not a joke. It's a huge deal. So you don't want to have, you know, you don't want to increase your risk of having to have surgery from it. So, you know, like I said, stick to dry compounds. There's just so many things you can do to avoid this. But if you're stuck in that situation right now, ride it out with your, get on Aromasin, ride it out with that and your Novadex for a little bit. If it's not getting better, you need to get off and PCT. And then you're going to want to wait a little bit and deal with the gyno, whether you're going to try to run a protocol with Letro or you're going to go visit a doctor and see what the options are. That's kind of the first part. Steve, I'll let you get into the second question here. Is it better to run Nova only for a few days past the flare going away, or would you take it the rest of the entire cycle at a lower dose?
You know what? Okay, here's the thing. If we have to back up, we're getting into the gyno conversation. We have to back up on this. If you are prone to estrogen problems and gyno issues, like you run aromatizing compounds and you start noticing itchy nipples, gyno flare-ups, lumps, stuff like that, you need to either cut down your aromatizing compounds, anything that aromatizes in the estrogen, or you need to not use them. Because I've dealt with so many people over the years who will get gyno problems even on a small 200, 250 milligrams of testosterone a week. Even with an AI. Even with Novadex. So if you're that prone, you need to not use those aromatizing compounds. The best way to cure gyno is not to get it in the first place. So you really have to learn your body. This is why we always say your first cycle should be one compound. Because if you run three or four or five compounds and you have problems, it's going to be kind of difficult to know what is causing the problems. It's like if you eat gumbo soup and you go in anaphylactic shock. Well, there's like 20 different things in gumbo soup. You're not going to know what you're allergic to, but obviously you're allergic to something in that soup. It could be one thing. It could be five things. We don't know. So that's the solution to the gyno thing. You really need to be aware when you're on cycle, if you start having issues, blood work is important to see where your estrogen levels are. You also need to basically find out why this is happening. If you're running testosterone or D-Bol or anything that aromatizes and you're running an AI at the proper dose and you're still having problems, you need to find out what is going on. Maybe your AI is fake. You don't know. So that's why blood work is so important in that situation. So would gyno run the anti-gyno protocol that is on in our sticky on evolution.org? That is your first step. Should you stop your cycle? I don't know. I can't answer that. It depends. If you let the gyno get so out of hand that it's that bad, then yes, you should stop your cycle and you should go onto anti-gyno protocol. But if you're just getting some itchy nipples, it's starting to flare up a little bit, you can probably get away with continuing your cycle, but you need to make adjustments with your AI and adjustments with what you're using. So that's my advice. Worst case scenario, the gyno surgery is a last resort, but it is going to be expensive, like Matt said. So that we don't want to do that. We don't want to ever have some doctor open us up. You know, I mean, that's scary as fuck to have someone open you up. I don't know. Surgery is not something you want to get. It's not something to take lightly.
No, gyno can be a real nasty thing, psychologically too. You know, guys, they won't want to go to the beach. They won't want to take their shirt off. They, you know, it's a huge problem. So you definitely want to avoid that at all costs. So let's get into our next drug topic that I promised. And this one is titled Metformin During Lean Bulk. I love this post here. It's asking for opinions on the forum, and he says, anybody use metformin on a lean bulk alongside hormones to avoid fat gain? I'm a bottomless pit and can eat all day. Thinking metformin may help with shuttling of nutrients and possibly lower my appetite a bit. Anyone rate this and what dosage? I see John Meadows uses it year round, and the guy is a genius and always looks paper thin skinned. Lot to this, lot going on here. Just the very first sentence. So he's trying to use it. He's looking for something on a lean bulk to avoid fat gain. The first thing that comes to mind, if that's what you're doing, is Carterin. That's the easiest one for me. That's the first one I'm going to go to. Lean bulk, I mean, what does that really mean? You're trying to add clean muscle. You're trying to not add, you know, much fat. Really, you can control that with diet. You know, you don't need to eat at a 1,000 calorie surplus. Eat at a 300 calorie surplus and make sure all your food's clean. You'll be just fine. You know, make adjustments. But Carterin can really help. It'll help you, you know, you'll be able to do a little bit more cardio if you need. It'll help with direct fat loss. So that's a good option too. The next part here, I'm a bottomless pit and can eat all day. Well, that sounds like there's a lot more going on there than just, hey, can I have a drug? Okay, you got to learn to control how you eat, and you don't need to be stuffing your face all day long if you're trying to lean bulk. So this, I bet you this guy, he's probably done the dirty bulk plenty of times. That's just exactly what that reminds me of. So that's an issue with appetite. You got to get that under control. You don't just need a drug for that. You got to learn how to eat the right way. You got to learn how to drink enough water. There's a lot of adjustments. I'd really like if this guy were to lay out his full diet and we could kind of look at it, because I'd be willing to bet that there's certain foods or drinks in there that are causing him to get hungry all the time. You know, if you're consuming a lot of sugar, a lot of caffeine, caffeine drinks like, you know, Coke and things like that, it's just gonna screw everything up. It's gonna make you want to eat all the time. You're not gonna get hydrated, which is gonna make you even more hungry. You know, it's gonna make you crave sugar. It's a recipe for disaster, right? So I'd really like to see his diet, because I think you fix the diet, that's how you lean bulk. That's really the solution there. Then the next part he says is, you know, shuttling nutrients. So, I mean, Steve, I think, didn't you say you've used metformin before?
Yes, I have.
Did you, maybe I'll just ask you that, like, did you notice anything as far as, you know, nutrient shuttling, anything like that at all with carb storage or sugar or anything like that?
I didn't notice any benefits to it. Metformin is, you know, it's a very, very important drug. It's an essential drug, essential medicine, according to the WHO. It suppresses glucose production in the liver. And you've got 50 million in the US who are taking metformin. Type 2 diabetics, very, very popular. If you have any family members who are type 2 diabetics, there's a good chance metformin is one of the drugs that they use on a daily basis. So what it does, the way it helps if you have diabetes, that it upregulates your insulin receptors, which become less responsive over time. So it refreshes insulin receptors and it makes them more sensitive to insulin that the body releases. So
what happens is most people, their bodies produce too much insulin. So they get weight gain, they get more health problems. And metformin will increase insulin sensitivity in those people. But if you notice that diabetics, it's the same thing with insulin. You know, diabetics, some diabetics take insulin, and lots of type 2 diabetics take metformin. I mean, are they ripped? Do they have tons of muscle? Of course not. So, I mean, it's just a drug. And one of the big downsides of metformin is it does reduce your IGF-1. So that's going to cause an issue. Does it suppress your appetite? Yeah, that's one of the things that it seems to do. I personally didn't notice anything like that on it. But, you know, again, it's one of those situations where on paper, it's just another something else that bodybuilders see on paper. Hey, this works for diabetics. It must work for us, you know, as bodybuilders. Is, you know, it's another example of us trying to, you know, use some type of prescription medication to our benefit. But it really, you know, doesn't do very much. There's a great supplement sold by Need to Build Muscle called N2Slin, okay? And that has natural ingredients in it that actually do block fat storage. So you would take it before your meal, and it will actually block your fat, the foods that you're eating, from being stored as fat. And it will also shuttle nutrients in your muscles. So instead of even wasting your time with metformin, it's one of those situations, too good to be true, it probably is. The guy who told him about it is on lots of gear, and he uses metformin. He's probably on also lots of insulin, lots of HGH. So it's one of those things where you gotta remember who your source is. You know, and remember, 50 million diabetics use metformin, and those 50 million diabetics look like shit. They're not in good shape. They wouldn't be type 2 diabetics if they were in good shape. So the answer is the N2Slin, better diet, you know, and we'll get into fasting, because fasting will actually increase your insulin sensitivity in your body and make it harder for your body to store fat. So if you have anything else to add, Matt, we'll get into our next topic.
Yeah, I've mentioned my buddy on the show before. He's in his early 50s and he is a type 2 diabetic, and he actually takes metformin. And trust me, he has a beer belly. He's not ripped by any means. And it's amazing when he focuses on his diet and he cuts out the beer. His doctor takes him off the medication and everything's fine. He's good. And then he goes back to, you know, the shitty lifestyle, and he's right back on the medication, you know? So I guess in the end, you know, are you going to get something out of it? Yeah, probably a tiny bit. You might get a little bit. If you get the perfect dose, you're taking it before meals the right way. Is it going to be worth the cost, potential side effects, all that? No, it's really not. It's going to be such a small effect, I would say. Don't even waste your time.
So I published a book about fasting. If you go on my signature on evolution.org or Elite Fitness, there's a link to purchase the book. But if you're lucky enough to be listening to this podcast, I've been kind of dropping free information from that book to you. The book isn't expensive. It's only a few dollars. But I didn't write the book to make money. You're not going to make money selling a book for a few dollars off online. I mean, that's not really the purpose. The purpose is to kind of spread this information to you. And, you know, I've been experimenting with fasting for, you know, the first time I did some sort of fasting was actually over a decade ago. And it worked for me then. The last couple of years, I've been doing different types of fasting to kind of learn more about it, been studying it. So I put out a book, really good book on it. And I want to kind of get into some of the things that are in that book. And one of the things I say in the book is about the health benefits. If you listen to our prior podcasts, you can go back and listen to the prior raw podcast where we get into the health benefits. So in this one, let's talk about the different types of fasting. And in my book, I talk about six different types of fasting. There's the first one, water fasting with just water. And this is very simple. You fast with just water and nothing else. Nothing else in your water. And Matt, I know you did this one. Tell us a little bit about it. How'd you do it?
Yeah, that's my favorite. Always start off, if you've never done it, with the 24-hour fast. And do a few of them. Not right in a row. Obviously, you know, like with a day off in between. Do one and then take a few weeks off and then do another one. It really helps you understand how you're going to feel while fasting. The very first time you do a water fast, it's going to hit you after the time you would normally eat breakfast. And it's going to be physical, but it's going to be overwhelmingly a mental thing you're going to battle. Because you're just going to be thinking about it. And that's not necessarily a negative thing. You might be excited because you're trying this fast, but it's really difficult to get it off of your mind. So if you're going to try it, you're going to want to be busy and you're going to want to always, always, always have water with you.
How much weight did you lose doing just the water per day?
When I did in one day, I don't remember just the one day. But I mean, in a 3-day, just a water fast, I could lose like 7 or 8 pounds.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
And most of that, you know, half of that's probably going to be just, you know, you're getting rid of some water and, you know, you're shitting out some old food that's stuck inside of your body. But I mean, it can be exceptional, you know, depending on what, you know, everybody's different, right? But it can be significant when you get into the longer times. But when you're talking about the shorter durations, you know, you'll definitely lose a bit just from that first day. But the you need to have water on you is what I was getting. Like you need to, because you're going to want to drink water. That will really help you fight the hunger. But I'm telling you, after you do it, maybe 3 times, it's so easy. You'll laugh at the thought of a 1-day fast. You know, it'll be no problem at all with just water.
Yeah, it's a psychological thing. The next type of fasting is dry fasting that I write in the book. And what dry fasting is, a lot of people ask, you know, what is dry fasting? All dry fasting is means nothing, no, not even water. So you're not eating and you're not drinking water. Is this something I recommend? No, but I have done it. And I've done it for the whole day, and it's very, very hard to do. If you live an active lifestyle, this isn't something you want to do. You will die if you don't drink water within 2-3 days. Maybe you can go 4 days. Depends. But you will likely get into serious trouble by the second day if you don't drink water. So the dry fasting thing, if you do want to try that, do it for like just the day. Do not do it for anything longer than that. And it's not something I recommend. The next one is water fasting with electrolytes. And this is one that Matt, you were telling me pre-show that you also did. Tell us what that means, water fasting with electrolytes, and tell us how you did it.
Yes. So basically that's, you know, you're just going to go, you're still going to go with water, but you're going to give your body the electrolytes it needs to balance out. You know, your body's always going to want that balance. So drinking a ton of water, you know, if you're still exercising, you're sweating, you're losing those electrolytes. So this is a way where you can, you know, you can either make your own drink to have, you know, during the day. You only need to have one drink with electrolytes in it. It can be very simple. But guys, this is not drinking a Gatorade in the middle of your fast. That's not what we're talking about with electrolytes. So if you guys just want a really simple drink to have, is what you want to mix in your glass of water. So just a half teaspoon Himalayan pink salt, half teaspoon cream of tartar. That's going to be basically pure potassium. You can find it at any grocery store. You can even find it at Walmart. It's just in the like a spice seasoning section. And liquid magnesium, 200 to 400 milligrams, is going to be a good dose. And take that before, during, after your workout. It's going to be awesome. It's not going to have calories. It's going to help replenish, you know, some of the electrolytes you're losing. And you know what? When you're doing more than, even if you're just doing a one day, but when you're doing more than a one day fast, it's amazing how something like a little bit of a taste of salt can kind of boost your mood a little bit. It's just something different from drinking so much water all day. And I think it's a great option if, you know, if anybody's interested in trying it. It's right up there with the water fast.
The next one after that is water fasting with additional non-caloric liquids and sweeteners. So this is the next step after water with electrolytes, which is what I did on my prolonged fast, by the way. This is one that allows you. So this one, when you water fast with additional non-caloric liquids and sweeteners, this means that you can have tea, coffee, zero calorie sweeteners like stevia, unpasteurized apple cider vinegar. So those can be taken. Sugar-free gum is another thing that you're allowed on this. But keep in mind, this is something I noticed, was like if I drink tea on an empty stomach or I take sugar or I chew sugar-free gum, I get an upset stomach from it. And that's just because of the other chemicals that are in that, that go in your stomach and kind of upset your stomach. So you want to be careful. If you notice you start getting upset stomach, scratch that idea. Go back to the just doing the electrolytes. But this is an option for those who don't think that they can not have their coffee or not have tea or not have something besides water and electrolytes. So this is the next step. Is it as effective as the water fast or water fast with electrolytes? No, but it is still going to do a lot of good for your body. So that is an option for you. The next step down is water fasting with caloric liquids. And Matt, tell us a little bit about what that means, caloric liquids.
Yeah, so again, first let me tell you what it's not. It's not drinking Coke as a caloric liquid as part of your fast, because that's going to completely ruin the fast. What it is you can drink, you're still going to drink water. Water is always going to be your base other than the dry fasting. But there's healthy things that you can mix in that do have some calories. So if you wanted to put in a little bit of lemon or lime to give it some taste, to get some vitamin C, it does have calories. Pure coconut water. So you don't want the crap from the grocery store that's got 40 grams of sugar in it. We're talking about pure coconut water, and you don't need to be chugging a whole big thing of it. Just put a little bit in there, have a little bit at a time, and it's going to be, you know, really nice for you, really beneficial. And again, another one you really have to read your labels is a greens powder. There's tons of really good greens powders out there that only have, you know, really, really low calories, but you can also find just as many that have 100 calories per scoop. Those you really don't want to get into. They're going to have a lot of added crap, probably flavors in them. So you really want to go to the ones that are just basically pure greens, which are going to be extremely low calorie. But those, you know, that's kind of like Steve said, it's a step down, but you're not adding shit to it. You're adding healthy things that are going to benefit you. Yes, it does reduce some of the benefits from the fasting itself. But it's still a very healthy practice. So it's definitely another one that's worth trying.
So the next step below that is going to be water, fruit, and veggie fasting. And this is one that's really easy to do. I mean, if you can't do this one, then, you know, you're really used to having a shitty-ass diet. I mean, but this one is one you could just do for a long time, and it'd be not a problem. This was the first fast I did about over a decade ago. And what this is you're going to eat watery fruits and vegetables, melons, papaya, mango, cucumbers, lettuce, berries, peaches. You can have an occasional pineapple, occasional grapefruit, occasional orange, you know, which are the more acidy fruits. Assuming they don't upset your stomach, those are okay. And you're not going to have to drink as much water because these watery fruits and vegetables have so much water content in them. Like watermelon has 92-95% water, for example. So that would cut down on you having to drink so much water, which is a pain in the ass. And it also will get you something in your belly besides water and besides electrolytes. So on this type of diet, I mean, you can lose a half a pound to a pound a day on this. If you did this diet for like 30 days, which would not be that difficult to do, you would lose 15, 20, even 30 pounds, depending on how overweight you were. So this is a really effective diet. It's going to give you a lot of antioxidants. It's healthy. It's a good way to detox. And, you know, it's not that hard to do, guys. I mean, if you tell me you can't go 30 days just eating watery fruits and watery vegetables, then I don't know what to tell you. But it's a great option for anybody, okay? Who, if you don't want to do the water fast, at least do this one twice a year. And you will really get some really good benefits. You'll lose a lot of fat and you'll really cleanse out your body. So, did you want to add something, Matt, before we move into how long to fast?
Yeah, just quick on that one, the fruit and veggie one. I think, Steve, you've talked about it before. I think that one's going to be very important to make sure you don't have junk food in the house. Because I think if you're eating and you're eating throughout the day, you're not really fasting, it'd be very, very easy to say, well, fuck it, I'm just going to eat something else because I'm eating anyway, I'm hungry. So you'd have to be disciplined. So I'd probably, you know, be careful on what you keep in your house with that.
So there are five ways that I describe in my book. Five ways of fasting links. So you can apply any of those six different types of fasts to these, except for the one where you're doing dry fasting. Because dry fasting, I specifically said that you can only do dry fasting for 2, maybe 3 days at the most. But I only recommend doing that for 1 day. So, Matt, I know you've done the first three on this list. So I'll let you talk about those and explain what intermittent fasting, 24-hour fasting, and short-term fasting is. And tell us a little bit about your experience, and then I'm going to get into the next two after that and explain them.
Yeah, so the first one, intermittent fasting, I'm actually doing it right now. I love it. I don't plan to ever go back to a different diet. It's just so convenient, and it's really easy for me to eat in a deficit every day. So basically what you do is you're going to fast for 16 hours a day, and then you're going to eat for 8 hours a day. You set your window. You know, a typical one is you either skip breakfast or you skip dinner. Depends how you want to do it. So what I do is my window is 1:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. That's when I'm allowed to eat. So I get up in the morning and all I have is water all the way until 1:30 every day. And I don't get hungry at all. Honestly, if I do, it's very, very slight and I just don't notice it. What I do is I start working out generally in the middle of the day if I can. And then I'll have my first meal after my workout, say around 2 or 2:30. And what will end up happening is that will tie me over great until, you know, I'll have a dinner at like 6. And that's usually the last time I eat. So I know I'm in a deficit by a lot every day because I'm only eating twice a day. And it's really easy. I don't get hungry like I would if I was trying to spread meals out. And I love the fact that I have it open until 9:30 because mentally it makes me feel safe. It makes me feel like if I get hungry, I can have something because it's still in my window. It doesn't happen often, but it's there. So that's kind of the way that I've been doing it. You do get the benefits of, you know, your insulin level does go lower and stay lower because it does take about 4 hours after you eat for it to go down. So that's the issue when you're eating every 2 hours, every 3 hours. You're never letting that insulin level get all the way down. So that's where you really do get some of the benefits there. This isn't like doing a longer fast or a water fast. This is just something you can do as an everyday lifestyle. The other type of intermittent fasting is called 5-2. Basically, you eat for 5 days and then you don't eat for 2 days in a row. That's kind of the other way. But the 16-8 is probably the most popular, and it's really easy to do. So the next one is the 24-hour fast. And I kind of got into that a little bit with the water fasting. This is another one. It's really simple to do. Eat dinner and then don't eat until the next day at dinner time. You'll struggle a little bit, like I said, the first couple times you do it. But you can push through it. Even though it's hard, you can push through it. And then after you do it a few times, it becomes very easy. I think it's really healthy. I wouldn't mind anybody deciding to do a 24-hour fast once a week. You know, just pick your day. Give your body a rest. Let it do some healing. Let it focus on things besides digestion. It's really good for your immune system. And over time, you'll see your insulin sensitivity gets better. So it's something, it's very beneficial to do. You can definitely work out on a day you're fasting. You'll have some great workouts. So don't let that scare you, you know, thinking that you might be tired. The next one is short-term fasting. So this is kind of the bridge. This is between the 24-hour and when you get into those longer fasts. So this is basically, you know, you're going to do more than 24 hours. You're probably going to go to 3, maybe 4 days. And this is when you really start to get some of the benefits. You're going to really get the immune system benefit, obviously, because that'll start, you know, right with the 24 hours. But you'll also get some of those cancer fighting benefits too. Your body really starts to get into killing those cells after you're fasting for a few days. You'll really start to notice it. And that only gets better as it goes on. So you don't want to do this, you know, you don't want to do it every week. You don't want to only eat 3 days a week, but I mean, every couple months, it's going to be really beneficial for you. I've done 3 and 4 day fasts and I didn't find them that difficult, but I would say this is probably the toughest time to do. I think earlier is easier, and I think if you get past it, it can even become a little easier. But you just learn. Once you get past those first few 24-hour fasts and you learn how to deal with hunger and how to control it, it's honestly not that hard. You just go, and this is a typical athlete answer. It's just day by day. You know, you keep busy. You learn that it's not on your mind all the time. You always have your water with you. You go about your day. You even save a little money. It's nice. Go to the gym, have your workout. You'll probably start to have either really good or really bad sleeps for a couple days. It kind of seems different depending on the person. But another one, definitely work your way up to it, and you'll really start to see the benefits after a few days on, you know, the fat loss too.
So there's two more. There's intermediate prolonged fasting. This is 4 to 10 days of fasting. And you're probably like, holy shit, how am I supposed to do this? But I'm telling you, once you get past that third day, it's downhill. Because the first 3 days is hard. You get hungry. Your body is trying to trick you into eating. And then you get into the fourth day and your hunger is gone. You won't be hungry after that. So this is tremendous benefits. Once you pass that four-day mark, you get your cell rebirthing starts kicking in. You're basically replacing your army of old people with fresh 20-year-olds in your cells. You get that autophagy going, which is the destruction of cancer cells in your body. So all the shitty cells die, and your good cells get stronger. You're going to be in a true ketosis. This is why your hunger goes away. You're actually going to be in ketosis, so your brain is going to be running on ketones instead of glycogen. So your body's going to start using your fat stores for energy instead of using food for energy as you usually do. So this type of intermittent prolonged fasting, 4 times a year. So every quarter, aim to do that. The prolonged fasting is 11 to 35 days of fasting. And again, you're like, holy shit, how the fuck can I do that? But again, once you get past that third, fourth day, it's downhill. And once you get into it, it just becomes easy. I did a 19-day fast, and I could have kept going. You know, I just, it's just like, it's not that difficult. So this is the true magic of fasting. Once you hit the 10, 11-day mark, that's when the magic starts coming in. You get all the benefits we've talked about in our prior podcast and on this podcast, but you also get the anti-aging benefits. You get the reversal of health ailments like diabetes, heart disease, cancer. You're going to start noticing these nagging injuries start going away because your body doesn't have to use up all half of its energy digesting food. So now it can focus on fixing other things. So if you have any type of nagging injury, you do with these types of prolonged fast, you'll notice those nagging injuries seem to improve. So this is something really interesting. I hit the 19-day mark on my prolonged fast. That's my record, but I'm going to definitely hit up another fast this summer. And I'm not sure how many days I'm going to go, but it's probably going to go up, be at least 20 days. Matt, what's the longest fast you've done so far?
For me, I've only gone to 5 days, and that was only one time. I prefer to do the 3 day. 3 day seems to be my favorite. The 24 I find easy, and I really like the difference in benefits I get when I extend it to like the 3 day range. So that's my kind of my go to. I've done 5, and I can definitely agree it does start to get easier. You just kind of get used. You just kind of get used to the hunger. You just kind of get used to how you feel, and that makes it easy. So, you know, it's all about setting goals and just sticking to it and prove to yourself that you can do something, follow through with something. It's, you know, prove that you're mentally strong. You'll be amazed if you do it, how good you feel about yourself.
So the 5 day fast that you did, we know the duration. So, but what in the first part of what we talked about, was it a water fast? Was it a water fast with electrolytes? Was it a water fast with non-caloric liquids like coffee? What was it?
So the 5 that I did, it was a kind of like the electrolyte. I was only adding salt. So I wasn't adding, but I was taking my multivitamin still. So I guess I would be getting, you know, some other things in there. So that was the way that I did it. I just basically put a pinch of salt into one of my waters during the middle of the day.
Yeah, and if you would have done, I don't know if you did any ketone tests, but you would have noticed that that would not kicked you out of ketosis. Taking a multi and taking some salt will not kick you out of ketosis. So that's okay. You know, so and even, you know what, even in my experimentation, drinking a little caloric drinks like pure coconut water won't kick you out of ketosis either. But if you were to eat something, even something like lettuce, even something like watermelon, even something, you know, anything. It could have been just bone broth or vegetable broth. That will kick you out of ketosis. So that is kind of fascinating. So you know, these are the way different ways that you can accomplish it, guys. But it's really important to implement fasting when it comes to fitness. You'll notice that you know, not only do you cure your injuries, but you'll also notice it becomes easier to keep the fat off. Once you start training your body to do these fasts. So we appreciate you guys listening. Evolution.org. Please come on our website and ask any questions you have, and we will talk about them on the show. Talk to you guys next time. Thanks for listening.